BulaNetwork.com, episode 133. Yeah, it's the thunderstorm episode. Greetings from the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com. Coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Big storms rolled in late yesterday. Continued through the night. So I thought it appropriate to play some rain and thunder. The subject today is not going to be anything nearly so dark and sinister as bad weather. There are many monikers for this. I guess the easiest explanation is experience management. The customer experience and all that kind of stuff. I would tell you that I have grown increasingly more focused on that, but that would be disingenuous because I have always been focused on customer experience. Hey, welcome to the show. Hope that you find some things here helpful. I would appreciate your feedback. You can leave me a review over at iTunes. You can also send me email to results@BulaNetwork.com. There is also a phone number there at the website. If you care to leave me voicemail feedback, you can do that too. So any number of ways to reach out and tell me what you think or ask any questions you may have. Experience management. What does that even mean? Now, there are tons of books out there. I've got many in my library that talk about managing the experience. Some view it from the perspective of managing the experience of your employees. If you are a leader, if you are a manager, what's the experience inside the company for those people that work with you, for you, and around you? More often than not, the focus, however, is on customer experience. What is the customer's experience? We didn't always view it that way. Now, I hearken back to the early 70s, and you didn't hear anything about customer experience. It was just really customer service. We wanted the service to be pretty spectacular. By the time we hit the mid-70s, inflation was rampant. The economy was just dreadful. And I've commented that I remember reading a quote, and it was from a woman. I remember that. And one of these days, I will research and find out who said this. And this would have been about 1974. And everyone was complaining, as they are wont to do when times turn tough. And it harkens to circa 2008 up to present day kind of an economy. A little different, but still bad. And she made a comment, we'd all buy a lot more if we could just get waited on. Well, that stuck with me and it resonated because I was a high school kid selling hi-fi gear and my parents had just brought me up. I was polite. I was helpful. I was courteous. I was conversational. I didn't know any of these tricks and techniques of selling strategies and whatnot. I came quite naturally to the art of asking questions. It just seemed proper for me that if somebody came in and they wanted to buy a stereo system, I had questions. They just seemed logical to me. How am I going to help this person if I don't find out something about this person? The kind of loudspeakers that people who are into classical music, the kinds of tones that they are particularly fond of lend themselves to, at the time, and I think probably still today, lend themselves to maybe a different kind of a loudspeaker in a home stereo system than a person who likes that thunderous bump of rock and roll. So not only did I have questions at the time about their taste in music, did they have any personal favorite passages? I would direct them over to our library of LPs, you know, vinyl records, and say, you know, is there something here that you happen to have in your collection, something that you're really familiar with, something that you really love? You know, let's play that. I would even encourage people to bring in their own records. If you've got a favorite record, hey, you know, bring that in, especially if they were looking at something a little more higher end. And quite often people did make a second, sometimes a third visit to the shop before they made a purchase. So that wasn't terribly uncommon. But questions about how large the room was, questions about what did the wall look like that these speakers were going to be in front of. How far away from the wall are you going to be able to get? How far away from the corner are you going to be able to get? I mean, these are things that I knew they would make a sonic difference in the sound system. And so I would ask questions, and I wouldn't do it. It wouldn't be an interrogation. It would just be a conversation. It would be give and take, back and forth. I learned as a young man, probably quite by accident, that just worked. I had friends on the showroom floor who, the minute somebody came in, they went into full-blown pitch mode. And I would sit back and I would watch and I would observe. It just didn't seem to me that it was the best experience for the customer, and it certainly didn't seem like it was profitable for the sales guy. So I learned very early that if the customer will do more talking, lot better experience for both of you. Well, my love affair with customer service began that early. And as a customer myself, I knew how I felt when I went in places. Now, I'll throw you a curveball here, because I think we realize that we are all wired very differently. And while I do believe that we should, based on the Bible example, we should behave toward others, treat others as we ourselves would like to be treated, I think when it comes to business things, sometimes we can get hung up in what we want as far as being a customer. And we can assume that that's just the way it ought to happen for our business or any business. There's a problem with that. It's not in the treatment of people. It's in the marketing. It's in the offers that we might make. For instance, I like broccoli, but I know a lot of people who don't like broccoli. Now, if my business had anything to do with broccoli, I'd say, well, everybody likes broccoli. Why? Because I like broccoli. Well, that's just not true. And yet a lot of business owners, a lot of business people, a lot of salespeople, we make these assertions that everybody is like us, and we know deep down they're not, but we assume that because we find something attractive, we find something that we like, that everybody else will too, or that we'll be able to convince them. I've never been a huge proponent of this whole convincing thing. I think we need to put our best foot forward. I think we need to make some compelling offers. And I think, sure, we sometimes may even need to make some compelling persuasive arguments. But my personal conviction is, if you've got to work too terribly hard at all that convincing stuff, you might be talking to the wrong person. If you don't like broccoli, I could sit down with you and I could give you all of the merits of broccoli. I could talk about my experience, my taste. I might could even talk to you about the health benefits of it. But the fact is, if you don't like broccoli, what am I doing? I'm wasting my breath. That's what I'm doing. And I'm wasting your time. So just stick that over there somewhere in the corner of your mind as we kind of move forward about this whole customer experience and how do we feel as customers, but more importantly in our business, in our operations, how is it that we want the customer to feel? And when we talk about experience, that really is it. Get on Twitter, pay attention to anybody in your Twitter stream who voices a complaint. And yes, more often than not, you're going to see somebody making some negative comment about travel. The flight was delayed. There's this layover. They overbooked the flight. They lost my luggage. We've been sitting out here on the tarmac for 45 minutes. I mean, those are the kinds of things that you're going to see in your Twitter stream. It's how these people feel. And it ranges from low-level frustration to being completely, utterly so irked out of their mind they can't see straight. And it's made worse because when we see people in social media make a complaint, more often than not, here's what's at the heart of it. The company could do something about this, but they're not doing anything about it, and that hacks us off. Yes, you might see somebody who gets caught in a winter. Well, take our weather here in Dallas-Fort Worth. So, knew some folks that were flying in and out of here in the last couple of days. And people were connecting with me, some on social media and some texting me, asking me about the weather here and wondering, you know, how that might affect their travel. So we've got these spring thunderstorms that come up and they don't shut things down, but yeah, they can delay things. And an airport like DFW International, you know, a 15-minute swing here or there in one or two flights, and it can throw off a lot of flights. Now, we understand that weather is not anything we can control. We also logically understand that we don't want to fly when there's risk. We certainly want to minimize the risk. We don't want to fly out in a snowstorm. We want that plane de-iced. We want them to take every, I mean, this is our life. So we know that logically, but our flight's delayed 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And the further it gets delayed, the more hacked off we get, the more irked we are. If it's something beyond the control of the company, that's fine. We will make some consideration for that, but not much. We will make more consideration for that if we see the company handling that to the best of their ability. If we think that they're really working hard to make sure that we are A, informed, and it's one of the biggest gripes that people have with, we just can't find anything out. People just aren't, I got news for you. It's not just the travel industry that irks us with that. When it comes to customer experience and the way customers feel, small business after small business after small business, I am a broken record that I have not encountered too many small businesses that I couldn't go in and within 24 hours make a monumental improvement in their customer experience simply by focusing on this one issue, and that is clear, rapid, consistent, timely communication. Have you ever heard a customer say, you know, I just want to know what's going on? You know, will somebody just please tell me what's going on? Sure, we all hear that. It is the choral refrain of the mass body of consumers out there. We just want somebody to talk to us. We just want somebody to tell us what in the Sam Hill is going on. I'm convinced after years of experience that more often than not, sometimes the communication lapses. Well, there's a variety of reasons, but one of the big reasons that I have found is because people at the front line just don't know what to say. Leadership has not provided them with what to say and how to say it. And people get so fearful and they are so, I'm talking about employees, I'm talking about frontline people, good people who want to do something good. You've got a mass throng of people who are waiting on a plane. It's 30 minutes late. There's massive thunderstorms and the frontline person, do they even know what to communicate? They just see this mob in front of them that is growing more anxious. And if it's late in the day, it's even worse because people want to get on planes and get home or get to wherever they're supposed to be. And I'm convinced that there is this form of what in the sales trade we call call reluctance. Call reluctance, very simply, for those of you that aren't in sales or you don't think you are, is the reluctance that people have basically to make a cold call. Well, that's understandable. Cold calling is, well, I'm not a proponent of cold calling. You might be, and if it works for you, hey, that's great and that's wonderful. And mine doesn't have anything to do with call reluctance. Mine just has to do with, I just think it's a stupid way to run a business, but hey, that's me. And if it works for you, power to you. But call reluctance is typically the reluctance of a salesperson to make a cold call. And what happens is people get amped up. They get very nervous. They get very anxious. They don't want to do it. They just don't want to do it. I think there's a different form of call reluctance when we're talking about managing the feelings and the experience of a customer, in that here's a bad situation. I'm at a front counter. I got a horde of people here who are waiting on a plane. It's late. The flight's late. The weather's bad. I'm reluctant to say anything. It's communication reluctance. I'm reluctant to say anything because I don't want to open a bigger can of worms. The minute I start talking to somebody, you know what's going to happen. They're going to blitz me with a million other questions, and I don't have any control over this. And we think that it's going to make the situation worse. And there's little doubt that it can. If that person comes across wrong, oh, it can absolutely make matters worse. I mean, you're better off not even having a person at the gate. You're better off just abandoning ship and telling the employees, okay, everybody, okay, gate 36, that flight that's late, you guys all just leave. Let's don't even give these people anybody to talk to. Now, I'm not advising that. It'd be bad business. But in some cases, that would be a better alternative than to have somebody up there who's hateful and who's not compassionate and who's not sympathetic with tired travelers who are irked by the whole situation. Maybe not even irked at the airline, just irked that this is happening to them. Why me? Why now? I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning, and here it is, it's 10 o'clock at night, and I've got another 2 hours of flight time before I can get home. And that's how people are feeling. Now, it brings up, before I get to kind of the training part and maybe some bullet points to help us think about what can we do to overcome that reluctance? What can we do to help our frontline people to communicate the messages that need to be communicated to our customers so that we don't elevate the frustration, so that we can reduce the frustration, so we can make people feel more comfortable and more confident that we have their best interest at heart, and to build higher trust? Well, there are some things that you can do, but before I get to that, you do know it's not about you. And a lot of business people, a lot of salespeople get really irked that the customer has no consideration for me. I'm busting my hump. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And don't they understand that I'm trying to help them? And all they just seem to just spit on me at every turn. It is the refrain of a lot of business people. Now, I'm never going to justify a customer being abusive, but let's be careful. Let's be careful with what we deem abusive. If a customer has frustration and they are venting, they are expressing that frustration, that is not necessarily abusive. And if you believe that it is, and if your knee-jerk reaction is that that is abusive, you might want to tap the brakes and you might want to get into a different line of work. Because if you're dealing with customers, and who among us isn't, you're going to have to deal with some people that are going to have some frustrations because they've got a viewpoint. They have a perspective. They've lived that day. They've lived their life. I mean, they've got their stuff going on. You got your own stuff going on. And while you think they should be mindful of yours, guess what they're thinking? They're thinking that you ought to be mindful of theirs. And I got news for you. One of you is right and one of you is wrong, and you know which one is which. You have to be mindful of the possible bad day the customer's had. And you can't take out your bad day on them. You do have to have some tolerance for letting them take out their bad day on you. But now, in my experience, that does not sustain itself. Meaning that I can break that cycle. I can approach that customer with this mindset. I bet you your day has gone really bad. But today's your lucky day. Because now you're right here in front of me. And I'm going to do everything in my power to turn your day around. What a difference. What a difference that philosophy makes. I can say that to a room of salespeople, and the room gets just as quiet as this audio just did. Because we all intuitively know that that's right. But I think we also all know it's so hard. It is so hard. I mean, there's big truth, you know, to that whole thing. Nobody knows the trouble of, you know, well, they don't. We've all got trouble. It's your job when serving a customer, a guest, a client, call them whatever it is you like to call them in your company. It is our job to make them feel good, to make them feel better, to build trust, to serve. And that demands a mindset that you've got to be in the moment all the time. One of the biggest problems that frontline people have is the ability to be there. Our minds drift and we live in our head and we go other places. And meanwhile, we've got this person right in front of us and they've just had a rotten, lousy day. But we're thinking about our own rotten, lousy day, and our own rotten, lousy day makes us contribute to the customer's rotten, lousy day when it should be just the opposite. We have to compartmentalize our own situation to the degree that we don't let that spill over with a customer. But I think at the same time, we have to think about, okay, yeah, we're having a lousy day, but who would we want to run into? Would we want to have a chance encounter with the us, the me that's going to stand in front of this customer and just be dazzling? Or would we want to run into the version of us that is sour, angry, frustrated? It's completely up to us. We can deliver that experience to the customer, and we typically will do it in one way or the other. I'm encouraging you to devote yourself to the wow, devote yourself to being remarkable, devote yourself to delivering a dazzling experience, dazzling performance. Okay. Let's go back to this call reluctance kind of a thing, the reluctance to communicate. And by the way, this is going to be a multi-part series on this whole thing about customer experience. So don't panic. I'm not going to wax on too terribly long here, much longer. But before I close, let's do think about and let's do consider this whole notion of being reluctant, because owner after owner will, I will hear it regularly, getting irked at an employee who did not call back someone in a timely fashion, and as a result, some problem that already existed. Now it's accelerated. It's grown markedly worse. And in many cases, it's because the employee, there's, you may have heard this notion, those of us here in the South, we certainly have, you know, let a sleeping dog lay. If you go up on a porch down south and there's a dog sleeping on the porch, don't wake that dog. You don't know what kind of dog that is, you know, just let him be. Well, we kind of do the same thing when it comes to customer experiences. We know this customer is not happy. Why do I want to call an unhappy customer? I don't want to call an unhappy customer. I'm a frontline person. They're going to chew me out. They're going to rip me a new one. They're going to ask me a million questions, and it's going to be real tense. It's going to be uncomfortable, and maybe I don't feel like I have the ability or the power to help them anyway. And all of those things, by the way, are very common. How much better is it when that person has had some coaching and some training, and we have told them, based on our own company and our own values, our own philosophy and whatever, and I can't dictate those to you. I've got my own ideas of what they should be, and I encourage people pretty regularly on what they should be, but I can't set those for you. But let's assume for the sake of this conversation that you're setting the bar high. You want every customer to be handled in spectacular fashion. Then you need to take responsibility and ownership for the fact that your frontline people are reluctant to handle these kinds of situations, in part probably because they just don't know how. And so I'm not saying that it's a script, but there needs to be some templated communication where you've given these people, let me tell you how to handle this. Let me tell you some things that we really want you to convey to these people. I remember some years ago coaching a group of people when it came to customer complaints, and I made the comment that one thing that I had done throughout my history was to guarantee to the customer that I would make them happy, that I didn't just simply want them to be satisfied. That's no good. I wanted them to be happy, and I promised them that by the time we were done, by the time that I had resolved their problem, I promised them they would be happy. And I asked them, I didn't tell them, I asked them to trust me, to make good on that. Well, now that just brought up all kinds of questions in the room. I mean, I just got lambasted by people that were like, well, you can't do that. How can you promise that? How can you promise somebody that, you know, they've got this problem and that problem, and you're going to give them this and you're going to give them that. I said, whoa. You're not understanding what I promised. You're assuming that if the customer had a problem, let's say with a product or a service, let's say a product. So they got a problem with a product. Let's say you've sold a car and they're not happy with the car. I'm not saying that the promise is we're going to take the car back. We're going to give you your money. I'm not speaking to any specifics, because so frequently at the front end, we may not know about the specifics. So I'm pretty consistent and have been for the better part of 40 years in training people that I have led to do two things. One, promise the customer that you will gather all of the facts. I don't have everything. I'm talking about the first conversation. I'm going to dig into this. I'm going to get all the facts. And when you do make that promise, make a time commitment, not a time commitment of resolution, but a time commitment on when you'll get back to them, and make it quick. I mean, like within an hour, if you can, sooner. The second thing you need to do is you need to make them a promise that they're going to be happy. You're going to see to it. You're not telling them how. And you know what? We may say, well, I demand that you do this, that, and the other. The fact of the matter is, in the heat of the moment, we all often make demands that might be unreasonable, that might not even be doable. And 100% of the time, in my experience, we can make people happy. There are solutions to these problems. Because what people want to see is they want to see that we're going to do what we say we're going to do. And they want to see us work for them. They want us to earn their business. And who can blame them? So for today's episode, let me leave you with this, just on this whole idea of communication. Take a real serious look at the complaints that you get. And look at those complaints through the vantage point of communication. That is, are these complaints that you're getting? Is communication or lack of communication, is that playing any role in these at all? Is it that people are hacked because nobody's calling them back? Is it that they're hacked because somebody's calling them back and not being helpful? Is it the fact that they've got problems and issues and they don't feel like those are being addressed or listened to or resolved? I'm just saying, take a look at those problems that you have, those customer problems that you have, and look at them just for now. Look at them through the lens of communication. I'm not saying that that encompasses every problem, but in my experience, it's a big one. More often than not, if people would just communicate with us more frequently, and if they would do a better job of it, and if they would allow us to vent a little bit, and if they would give us some assurance, if they would not deal with us as we deal with them. You know, the irate traveler who comes up is soaking wet, and there's a rainstorm outside, and the plane's late, and pounds on the table and makes all these demands. If we start behaving just like that back, it's just going to escalate. I mean, how much better? Man, you look like you have had a day. Let me go get you a towel. I mean, let me at least get you some paper towels here. Dry you off a little bit. Man, I hate it that we've got this rotten weather. And I hate that it's fouled up the schedules all over this airport. But, you know, it's your lucky day because you've run into me and you've run into Randy Air. Well, it's not unfortunately how the airlines, most of the airlines work. I mean, just this week, Blog World went on in New York, and you could just see all kinds of tweets going out about people who were trying to get in and out of New York at Blog World. And it was, you know, pretty crazy. And there were certain airlines that were just absolutely dipped in the grease, and rightfully so. Because you know what? Their frontline people aren't communicating that. Their frontline people are, you know, can't do anything about it. Sorry, you know, hey, it's the weather. What do you want me to do? I want you to listen to me. I want to see that you're trying to help me. I want to feel good because I picked your airline. And that's exactly what you and I want too. So as we think about trying to, pardon the phrase, manage the experience, manage the feelings of the customer, we've got to start, I think, when it comes to communication. And that's not just the verbal messages, but it's our body language. It's you go into a hotel or you go into a retail store and you're standing at a counter and somebody is seated. Oh, totally hacks me off. Totally hacks me off. Huge no-no. Stand up, advance toward the customer. I mean, be anxious to serve. So that's equally as important as anything you might say or not say. Food for thought. Hey, thanks for listening again. Leave me a review over at iTunes, won't you? Got one other favor to ask. Upper right-hand corner of the website, plug in your name and email address. I'll send you updates on what goes on here, and I'll send you some updates on some things that go on behind the scenes here at the Yell Studio, exclusively for those folks on the list. Kind of pull the curtains back, even more so than I normally do. And we'll dive into this a bit more next time, and we'll expand things out. So make sure you stay tuned for the next episode, which would be 134. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is Bula, B-U-L-A, network.com. Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas is where I'm from. This is the Yellow Studio.